Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Times Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 96 event, which takes place in Portland, Oregon. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 0-4 in our premium bets for UFC Fight Night 95 to lose 8.175 units overall. We also lost our one-unit free bet on the Lewin Chagas by TKO prop. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 96 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a women's bantamweight contest between Kelly Fasholtz, who is 3-1, and Ketlin Vieira, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Fasholtz -130, the comeback on Vieira at -110. Looking over sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it is currently Fasholtz -115, Vieira is -105. This line did flip originally, action coming in on Vieira, now action back on Fasholtz a little bit, flipped it back. So we're going to probably see a lot of two-way action on this fight and a lot of split opinion as well. And I understand it. I mean, Vieira is definitely a hyped prospect coming out of Brazil. She's only 24 years old. She has a judo black belt, a jiu-jitsu brown belt, and she's a long-rangey fighter. I mean, her striking's actually decent as well. That's what she prefers to do. And she looks good doing so, especially with her length. I mean, she definitely could cause some problems to a lot of fighters, but her level of competition thus far has been pretty low. And she's definitely facing a step up in competition with Fasholtz. Fasholtz made her UFC debut not too long ago against Lauren Murphy. And that's a tough debut to make. I mean, Lauren Murphy, in my opinion, is one of the best bantamweight female fighters in the division right now. So I think Fasholtz actually performed, even though she lost late in that fight, she performed relatively well. Fasholtz is a BJJ purple belt, and she does have some stand-up to go along with it as well on the feet. She has a little bit of power. She is aggressive. She counter-strikes well, and I mean, a lot of things to like about her, honestly. She's tough as nails. She takes the shot well. I mean, the problem is her defense could get a little bit better because she does absorb some punishment, and you don't want to see as much of that going on with her, but at the same time, she's tough as nails. She could take it and she could dish it out even better, I think. And again, she goes for takedowns once she's on the ground. She's aggressive. She has some good ground and pound. She could look for the submission and end things on the floor as well. So she's basically a grinder with some decent striking and power on the feet. So you got to love that. And she did step in again on short notice against Murphy to take that fight. So I'm expecting with a full camp, a better Fasholtz, a little bit more confidence as well because she got that debut out of her way. So she's going to be a tough out for Vieira. So I do think that this fight is going to be competitive, especially at first, but I think eventually Fasholtz is going to kind of find her groove, start taking over a little bit. And I just don't think that Vieira is a better fighter right now. I don't think any particular area that she has Fasholtz in. Again, she has some length. It's going to be tricky and a little bit tough to adapt to at first, but I think Fasholtz is going to be the better fighter. I think she's going to be landing the harder shots. I think she's going to be controlling the octagon more as well. So if it hits the scorecards, I think Fasholtz honestly gets the decision here. It's a bigger step up in competition for Vieira than the other way around. I think this is a step down for Fasholtz. So I'm picking Fasholtz. I do like what I see in her, and I think she can continue to improve and get better as well. So I'm going to go her way.
Yeah, Kelly Fasholtz definitely showed that she belongs in the UFC in her debut. I mean, she took that on 10 days notice against Lauren Murphy, an excellent fighter, and she was definitely holding her own. She was beating up Murphy pretty badly, actually, in the first about 3 or 4 minutes of the first round, and then she kind of faded a little bit. Murphy took over, and, you know, the fight ended in like the last couple seconds of the third round. But I do think Fasholtz definitely showed some serious promise in that fight. Now, we'll see if a full training camp will allow her to live up to the promise this time around or if she fades again. Hopefully she doesn't. But against Ketlin Vieira, I think that she has a really good chance of really showcasing what she's capable of, because you have to remember, Fasholtz actually, her base is jiu-jitsu. Most of her wins are by submission. So if the fight does go to the floor where Vieira does like to take it, I think Fashels will be just fine. She had trouble against Lauren Murphy, but that was basically the end of the third round when she was exhausted and she just couldn't defend herself properly anymore. I think in a regular fight like against Vieira with a full training camp, she'll be fine if it goes to the floor and she'll probably have win scrambles and get top position. Vieira is long. She's rangy for a woman's bantamweight. She has a little bit of power in her right hand, but for the most part, she's not that great of a striker. She's pretty much uses her left hand just to probe a little bit, but it's all about the right hand with her. That is a bit concerning, though, because Fashels actually was clocked repeatedly by the right hand from Lauren Murphy, and I think Vieira throws it as good as Murphy, if not better, with potentially a little bit more power. So Fashels will definitely have to be on her guard for Vieira's right hand, but that's the only strike she really has to worry about with Vieira. Vieira isn't that dangerous with her kicks. She's not that dangerous with knees or elbows. She's definitely still developing her striking game, but she does have power with just overhand right hooks, you name it, right hand. But if Fashels can make this more of a technical striking battle, I think she wins it. If it goes to the floor, I think Fashels can win it. So as long as Fashels doesn't get clipped and doesn't gas, then I think she wins this fight. So I like Kelly Fashels as well. Now moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Cody East, who is 12-2, taking on Curtis Blaydes, who is 5-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Blaydes -190, the comeback on East +150. Right now over five dimes, it is Blaydes -230, the comeback on East is a +190. So a little bit more action coming in Blaydes' way. I understand it. I'm actually a little bit disappointed. I was hoping the action would come in the other way, to be honest with you, with East. Not that I'm disrespecting East at all, because he is definitely a talented heavyweight, especially his striking, man. East's striking offense is something to watch, really. I mean, it's fun because he mixes things up so well. He's got a little bit of speed. He's got some good footwork. He's got some good accuracy. He's got some good aggression. So what you see offensively from East on the feet is definitely pretty good, especially in the UFC heavyweight division. I think he's going to be, honestly, offensively, one of the better strikers. But defensively, it's where it's at with East. I mean, he does have some flaws on the feet. It's protecting that chin. He's been knocked out a couple times in his career. Also, his gas tank is a bit of an issue for me as well. I think as the fight progresses a little bit, he tends to slow down. So those are two attributes that I think are strikes against him. And then once he does get put on his back, he's got pretty decent wrestling. I mean, he does have somewhat of a wrestling background, of course. I believe it was high school wrestling level, and he's pretty good in that aspect. But he's going to be definitely at a weak disadvantage here against Blaydes in the wrestling department as well. So I think East has an uphill battle here against Blaydes, and that's obviously why Blaydes is favored. I mean, on the feet, though, I do give East the edge. Blaydes does still need to develop his striking a little bit more. Now, he does have some power on the feet, but I just think that East is the more versed striker overall. So East is going to definitely be a threat, but I think Blaydes can handle it. His chin is good. I mean, his debut loss to Ngannou, he did take some punishment. I mean, unfortunately for him, his eye swelled shut as it went, so that was definitely a problem for him. But that being said, I mean, he did absorb some heavy, heavy hands from Ngannou, and he ended up taking it well. And Blaydes himself, again, he does have power on the feet. He might not be as versus a striker as East, but he can definitely do some damage, and I think he's got a good shot to actually knock East out on the feet as well. But Blaydes' game is definitely the grinding aspect of things. I mean, he could take the fighters down usually. He can grind them out. Even against, again, Ngannou, he was able to take him down, and Ngannou is very difficult to hold down. So Blaydes did a pretty good job with that. But that being said, I mean, East is a different matchup, different fighter. I think he's going to have more success in that area, honestly. And then again, I do trust him a little bit more as far as his chin goes. So this should be a pretty fun heavyweight fight. I don't expect it to go very long. I do think it probably ends by Blaydes getting the KO either on the ground or standing up either way. So I am going to lean his way. I think he's a rightful favorite here. And although East is definitely talented, and he trains out of Greg Jackson's too, so you know he has good training partners, good coaches behind him. I just think that Blaydes is just on another level, like a step up above East in this spot here. And I think Blaydes, if he gets his act together a little bit and starts winning some fights, and with this one, of course, starting here, I think he can get on a little roll and eventually maybe get himself into title contention at one time or another for the UFC heavyweight division. The UFC heavyweight division is still one of those divisions that you could definitely climb the ladder, string together a few quality wins, and you never know. So I think Blaydes has potential to eventually be a title contender. And I'm not so sure that East does. I think East is going to be more of the gatekeeper type of role here. And if you can get by him, then you're doing some good things. So respect to both fighters, but I honestly think that East is just in a bad spot here against Blades. So I'm going to pick Blades to knock him out.
Yeah, these guys are very interesting prospects in the heavyweight division, and they both came up short via TKO in their UFC debuts. East was just blasted by Walt Harris in a competitive striking battle, while Blades, he ran into Francis Ngannou, who's, in my opinion, one of the best up-and-coming heavyweights on the entire roster, and he just came up a little short. Now, this time around, matching up against each other, I think in a pure stand-up fight, Cody East would probably win it, but this is MMA, and even though East trains at Jackson Winklejohn and he definitely has the build and size of a good heavyweight, I don't know if he can handle Curtis Blades wrestling here. Blades mixes it up pretty well. On the feet, he has power, he's aggressive, but he's not the most technical or super dangerous, especially against somebody that knows what they're doing on the feet like Cody East, but where Blade shines is that wrestling. Like, he is a ferocious wrestler. Great takedowns, great explosion. He did take Ngannou down twice in his UFC debut. We just couldn't keep him down. I mean, Ngannou's just so big and strong. And I don't think East will have the same success in getting back up and in his ability to avoid the takedowns in the first place. So what I think this fight boils down to is whether or not Cody East can keep this fight standing. And I just don't think he can. I think, Curtis Blades gets repeated takedowns. I think when he does get top position, he's going to be a lot more aggressive than he was in his last fight because it's going to be a little easier to hold the position. And then once he starts, dropping some bombs, I think Cody East could be in some really big trouble. So I'm going to side with Curtis Blades here because I think his wrestling does make a big impact in this fight. So Blades is my pick. Now dropping down to the light heavyweight division, we have Jonathan Wilson, who is 7-1, taking on Ion Kutalaba, who is 11-2 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Kutalaba -130, the comeback on Wilson at -110. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, is Kutalaba -160. The comeback on Wilson is +140. So action coming in Kutalaba's way. I get it. It is a little bit interesting, though, because Kutalaba is a pretty good fighter, but he's going to have his hands full with Wilson. I mean, Wilson was definitely a hyped prospect entering the UFC. He got a nice W there early on, but then, of course, in his last fight, he just got beat by Da Silva, which I think derailed his hype train a little bit there. And I think people are honestly disrespecting him probably a little bit too much in the spot. But getting into Kutalaba first, I mean, the guy is definitely a finisher. I mean, he does have some nice striking skill, and that's what he does best on the feet. I mean, he does have some wrestling capabilities and some submission skill, but more than anything else, Kutalaba is definitely a striker. He's got speed and power on the feet. He moves well. The one problem I have with Kutalaba on the feet is he does keep his hands low and he's very hittable, but he has shown a solid chin, so he absorbs some of that punishment. So that's definitely a good thing, and his cardio seems to be okay overall as well. So Kutalaba has faced decent competition outside of the UFC, but then, of course, you know, he suffered a decision loss making his UFC debut as well. So that doesn't sit that well, but he's getting another shot here, and I think that he's going to have some success against Wilson on the feet as well, because Wilson does like to stand and bang. But Wilson, again, coming off a hard-fought battle with Da Silva. We're going to get into Silva a little bit later on this card as well. But that was an interesting fight. I mean, because both fighters really displayed some decent striking games. I mean, that's what Wilson does best. He's a striker. He's got powerful hands, definitely. He mixes things up well. He even digs to the body well. I mean, he's got good accuracy with things. He can and has the ability to take the fight to the floor, but he does prefer to stand and bang. So this is going to be a fight because both fighters like to do the same thing. I think their takedown defense overall is going to probably neutralize each other out, and we're going to see a pretty good striking affair going back and forth here. So it is tough. I mean, I've honestly – it is a true pick'em type of fight in my opinion. I've been going back and forth on the pick here because I could see Wilson getting, again, undervalued a little bit. He does have enough power in his hands, and with Kutalaba's defense being as bad as it is with him keeping his hands low, I think Wilson's going to land those shots, even dig into the body a little bit. But on the other hand, I think Kutalaba has better cardio, and I think he's showed a better chin as well thus far. So with all that being said, I still need to lean a little bit more towards Wilson, especially with the current movement and price. I mean, the disrespect factor that's going on here. I know that Wilson was a hyper prospect and kind of got derailed a little bit, but I still see some good things about him. And I think that this fight, I guess Kudelaba is going to be a little bit different. He ate a lot of knees in his fight against Da Silva. I mean, the clinch game and the Muay Thai plum from Da Silva was just a thing of beauty, honestly. I'm not even sure how Wilson didn't go down sooner with some of the shots that he absorbed to the body with those knees. So he did show some toughness there, but ultimately, I mean, he ended up getting beat. But this is a different matchup. I think that he is going to have some success against Kudelaba in this spot as well. It should be a fun fight, entertaining fight. Somebody's probably going to end up getting beat and knocked out possibly. And I'm going to slightly lean a little bit more towards the underdog right now because, again, I think that everybody's just coming in one way thinking Kudelaba has this an easy fight ahead of him, and I don't think that's the case. I think Wilson's going to end up showing up here, and I think he's going to actually do okay. So I'm going to pick Wilson to defeat Kudelaba in this spot.
And I like Wilson too. Kudelaba showcased some good things in his UFC debut against Turkunov. I thought he showed some great speed. He was light on his feet for all three rounds. His conditioning actually looked pretty good. And his hands were really fast. I mean, he was reckless and wild, but he was winging an overhand right as fast as I've ever seen someone throw one. So if that connects against Jonathan Wilson, Wilson could definitely be in some trouble. But the other thing that Kudelaba showed on the negative side was definitely his defense. I was not impressed by his defense at all. He didn't really have much lateral movement, much head movement at all. And he ate some shots. While Misha Surkunov isn't exactly a powerful striker, he definitely was connecting repeatedly with the heavy left hands against Kudelaba. And, Kudelaba's face was just a big, like swelled and red pretty much after the first few minutes when he just really started, you know, taking it. Now, Jonathan Wilson is a better striker than Surkunov. He's a more powerful striker than Surkunov. He's a more dynamic striker than Surkunov. So if this fight stays standing, I think Wilson actually has a really good chance of landing some big shots and doing some serious damage. I know Wilson lost his last fight, but you have to remember he was landing some good shots in that fight against Frankenstein, or if you want to call him Henrique Da Silva. In that fight, it was a competitive back and forth battle, and Wilson, even though he started to slow down in that second round, when Da Silva started pressuring him, he got into a firefight with him and then dropped him. So he's still very dangerous for probably about two rounds, depending on the pace of this fight. His last fight was very high paced, and I would think that this one is going to be as well. But you just have to look at the way that these guys fight. I know Kutalaba's a little bit better conditioning, but like in terms of recklessness and wildness, he's not accurate. He doesn't land as often. He didn't absorb a lot of strikes, even though he did eat some big ones. Like it was definitely a more measured type of fight. So I think in a more measured fight, I don't expect Wilson to fade as badly as he did in his last bout. And with how much better of a striker Wilson is than Misha Surkunov, I think, and more powerful, I think people are going to be really surprised. So I actually think Jonathan Wilson can knock Kudelaba out. And if he doesn't knock him out, I think he can win the first two rounds and Kudelaba will probably be too tired to knock him out in the third. So I'm going to side with Jonathan Wilson here as well. Now moving on to the Fight Pass headliner in the middleweight division, we have Nate Marquardt, who is 37-16-2, taking on Tamden McCrory, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put McCrory -245, the comeback on Marquardt at +175. Right now it is McCrory -230, the comeback on Marquardt is +190. Basically staying as it opened, just line margins tighten up a little bit as well. Two way action in this fight. I think a lot of people are kind of scared to touch this fight. I mean, Marquardt is obviously, I mean, throughout his career, he's accomplished more than McCrory. I mean, he's fought the who's who. He's has a lot of quality wins. I mean, at one point, he was one of the best middleweights in the world. No questioning that at all. McCourt definitely has some skill on the feet. He's got some good wrestling. He's got a good ground game to go along with it too. So he's a very complete fighter. McCrory, you could say a lot of the same things. I mean, obviously he didn't get to reach the level Marquardt did at 185 pounds yet, but I mean, he does have some serious potential in this spot. I mean, unfortunately for him, that got derailed by Jotko in his last fight. So this is kind of a bounce back fight to see where he's at in his career, but Marquardt does have some power. So McCrory definitely has to be careful here, because I do think this is McCrory's fight to win or lose though, because at this point in Marquardt's career, I almost thought he should have honestly retired. I mean, I have a ton of respect for him, but you don't want to see a guy get knocked out or not be as competitive as he once was, or not, you know, lose kind of that greatness that he once had. And I mean, he's been knocked out 5 times throughout his career. And I think it's going to probably eventually happen again, you know, as he progresses his career. And it's probably going to be against McCrory here, because if McCrory can push the pace, which I think he will, he'll be the aggressor in the spot. He's got some length on Marquardt as well. I think he's probably going to have enough to knock Marquardt out. On the ground, if it does hit the ground, I think the wrestling kind of neutralizes each other out a little bit here. I think they're both skilled enough offensively, especially that they can definitely submit each other, but I think that's pretty much a wash here as well. So it's going to come down to the striking, and with the length of McCrory, and I think even though he just got knocked out, I still trust his chin a little bit more than Marquardt's. I have to lean his way. So it's a tough spot where the price is right now, McCrory minus 230. I mean, I'd say that it seems like it might be worth a bet, but for those of you guys that are going to put him in parlays and kind of want to fire against Marquardt and kind of fade him here, you never know. I mean, just remember, he did knock out CB Dolloway recently. I mean, he has it in him. I mean, he still has that one punch knockout power, and McCrory coming off a knockout loss like that, you just never know. So I'm pretty confident McCrory wins this fight, but from a betting standpoint, I'm just going to kind of approach it with caution for you guys out there. So it's probably a favorite or pass situation, but honestly, I would probably pass at this point. But I am going to pick McCrory to win this fight.
The last thing to go for fighters is always power, and Nate Marquardt definitely still has power. Obviously, you saw that in the Dolloway fight, as Nick mentioned. But so Sandy McCrory is going to have to be careful. He can't just recklessly pursue the knockout here, or he's going to walk into something. Now, Marquardt, actually, if you've watched his last two fights, he's kind of changed his approach a little bit. Back in the day, he was much more aggressive on the feet, and he was kind of the guy that would initiate things. But now it's more he's looking to respond to what his opponents are doing and then try to land that good counter. And obviously it worked in the Dolloway fight, but then when he faced Thiago Santos, he just couldn't quite find that opening, and then Santos clipped him, and then he couldn't recover, and he was put out. So I think against Tamden McCrory, Marquardt is probably going to be doing his thing, circling on the outside, looking for his opening, and if it doesn't come, or if McCrory tags him before he can connect with that opening or take advantage of it, then I think McCrory will probably just go ahead and pick up a knockout victory. Now, another thing you do have to consider, Marquardt probably is the better wrestler here. I think their ground games do neutralize each other. Both guys are very solid grapplers, but Marquardt probably does have the better ability to take the fight to the floor if need be, but he really hasn't tried to do that much. So what I expect happens here is it's going to be a stand-up fight with McCrory taking center control of the octagon and then pushing forward. And as long as McCrory doesn't do anything crazy or wild or reckless, then at some point Nate Marquardt's going to make a mistake. And I think McCrory will connect with something solid and probably put him out. But I just don't think the price is worth it at this point, because honestly, whoever lands the first really big shot is probably going to win. And you never know. Nate Marquardt could definitely still do it, but he is 37 years old to McCrory's 29. He's had a lot more fight years and wear and tear in his body, obviously. So I'm definitely concerned about that. But so I'm going to side with Tamden McCrory here. But again, I'm not quite sure that the price is right if you do like McCrory for a bet. But my pick will be McCrory. Now dropping down to the welterweight division for the first fight of the Fox Sports 2 prelims, we have Keita Nakamura, who is 32-7-2 with one no contest, taking on Elizu Zaleski dos Santos, who is 15-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Nakamura -190, the comeback on Dos Santos or Zaleski, if you will, at +150. Right now, it's actually Zaleski is at +125. Nakamura is all the way down to -145 as a favorite. So action coming in for Zaleski at the dog price. I get it a little bit because Nakamura, obviously, he's been – I mean, for the diehard fans, we all know that he's been in the sport for a long time. I mean, just look at the resume. I mean, Brian just mentioned his record. It's pretty impressive, and that's a lot of quality competition that he's faced and a lot of good fights. I mean, the guy's been through it. So MMA years, he's only 32 years old, but he's beyond that in MMA years for sure. But he's had a bit of a resurgence in the UFC thus far. I mean, the UFC brought him aboard, and at this late in his career, he really – does look like he belongs. I mean, he's got some pretty quality wins. Even his loss against Breeze wasn't too bad. It was close. It gave a lot of people a scare for sure that bet Breeze in that spot. So Nakamura's ground game is more than impressive. I mean, look at what he just did recently with Noak as well. So that's the key here for Nakamura. Can he get this fight to the ground? I mean, Dos Santos, his takedown defense is okay. Zaleski, I should say, sorry. Zaleski's takedown defense is okay. But still, I think Nakamura finds a way to get to the floor. And once he gets you on the floor, I mean, his jiu-jitsu game and his top control and even his ground and pound, it's pretty fun to watch. I mean, he's slick on the ground, and I think he's definitely going to outclass Zaleski on the ground. Even though Zaleski has shown some flashes in his own right of a bit of a ground game, I still think Nakamura definitely is a level above Zaleski in that spot. So it's going to come down to, can Nakamura get this fight to the ground or not? If he doesn't, I mean, in the stand-up department, he has looked okay recently, but Zaleski, whatever you want to say, he has the advantage on the feet for sure. He's got a lot of knockout power. He can clip that chin to Nakamura and put him out. So I think that's what everybody believes, and that's why they're coming in on the dog. They think that he could sprawl brawl and probably knock Nakamura out. Wouldn't be shocked if that happens, but I still think it's a little bit too much disrespect right now with everybody being so sure of Zaleski getting that TKO or KO stoppage or possibly even winning on the scorecards by outstriking him, I guess. But for me, I think Nakamura finds his way to the ground. He's only been knocked out, even though his chin's been checked a few times and he's been wobbled throughout his career. He's only officially been knocked out one time, I believe. So, I mean, with all those fights, it's not really that bad. I think Nakamura's chin can probably hold up here. And if it does, he'll find his way to the ground. And once he's on the ground, I mean, he's a finisher. The guy could definitely submit Dos Santos here in this spot, and I think he probably does. So my pick is going to be Nakamura because of his ground game.
I like Nakamura as well. Now, Zaleski actually looked excellent in his last fight against Akhmedov. If you watch that fight, Akhmedov would try to get a takedown, and if he got one, Zaleski would drop for a leg lock and then use that as a sweep and then take top position. It was really impressive, and it worked repeatedly. Like, Akhmedov had no answer for it. He just stopped going for takedowns. That was his answer. And on the feet, Zaleski is a pretty solid striker as well. He mixes things up pretty well. He's decent from range. He's pretty good on the inside. When he smells blood, he can definitely turn up the pace a little bit and put the serious pressure on his opponents. The problem is his takedown defense is actually not very good. The sweeps are good. His scrambling is good. His grappling overall is good. But repeatedly, he has found himself on his back. It happened in his UFC debut where he lost a decision to Nicholas Dalby. Dalby just kept mixing in takedowns, and he got top position, and that helped him win the fight. And then Akhmedov repeatedly took him down with really no problem for the first two rounds before he started to slow down. So Keita Nakamura, a fighter that really wants the takedown, that wants to get top position, that wants to dominate you on the floor, I think this is almost a field day for him. Now, Nakamura, obviously, his chin isn't great. In his UFC debut, he almost got knocked out multiple times by Yi Jinglong. In his last fight, Kyle Noak rocked him with his first punch, a stiff jab. So Nakamura definitely can be knocked out. He hasn't yet, but the signs and symptoms are definitely there for a future knockout. Now, will Zaleski be the guy to do it? I don't think so. Nakamura actually looked pretty solid on the feet in his last fight against Noak. He was able to put a lot of pressure on him on the feet. He threw some heavy hooks, and then he rocked him with the knee up the middle. So he definitely can mix things up pretty well on the feet. Now, I don't think he's as technical as Dos Santos, and he definitely kind of keeps his head on a straight line, so he could walk into something potentially. But overall, I think Nakamura can earn some respect on the feet, and then that will definitely open up the takedowns. And when he is on the ground, I don't see that leg lock sweep working for Dos Santos like it did in his last fight. Zaleski is a really solid grappler, and he is good defensively on his back, but Nakamura is an elite ground fighter and has excellent top control and positioning, and I think he can do some serious damage when he gets his takedowns, and I don't see him getting swept. I don't see Zaleski getting back to his feet easily. So I think Nakamura can survive the stand-up, and then I think he can dominate the floor. So I think Nakamura can win this fight pretty convincingly. So my pick is going to be Kaito Nakamura. Now moving all the way back up to the heavyweight division, we have Shamil Abdurakhimov, who is 16-3, taking on Walt Harris, who is 8-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Harris, -130, Abdurakhimov at -110. Looking over at Five Dimes as we speak, the line did flip, but it's basically still around a pick 'em. Abdurakhimov is -115, Harris is -105. So the whole way, you pretty much had to lay some juice. And I think it's that kind of fight, honestly. I mean, I think overall, Abdurakhimov is the better mixed martial artist. I mean, he's got some ground skill, of course. He's capable of winning fights by submission. He's got some underrated stand-up game as well. He doesn't have that crazy punching power that a lot of the heavyweights do at times, but he's still a pretty technical guy on the feet. He moves okay as well, has a little bit of speed on him. So he's definitely a tough out. He's fought some solid competition again outside of the UFC as well. And so far, he's been, I think, okay. I mean, the UFC. Harris coming off of finally a pretty decent win for him in the UFC. He's got some confidence behind him now as well. Over East, which we were just talking about earlier on this card as well. And we just kind of mentioned how good East's striking is. So Harris was able to outstrike him, even though it was competitive. I mean, definitely East had his moments in that fight, but Harris is the one that ultimately got it done. And he's got kind of that athleticism, that speed, that power. That can put people's lights out. So it doesn't take much with Harris. I mean, that's how gifted of an offensive striker he can be. But I do have some question marks in this spot. And it's, I mean, as the fight progresses, if Harris can't get Abdurakhimov out of there, I think Harris does have a tendency to slow down a little bit. I think Abdurakhimov is a pretty smart fighter. His fight IQ is decent. He's going to probably be able to control enough of this fight along the way and probably grind out a decision win. I mean, I'm saying that, and it's a heavyweight fight. Usually the 1.5s are, you know, you've got to lay some unders in that spot. You know, you got to lay it under, but here actually it's about 1.5 now that I'm looking at Five Dimes, -120 on the over. So it's basically a pick 'em on the over under 1.5. And I'm saying this has potential to actually go to the scorecards. So it does. I mean, it's one of those heavyweight fights that I could see kind of dragging out a little bit and lasting some. Now, on the other hand, I mean, with Harris's athleticism and his ability to finish fights, you never know. I mean, he could definitely end it early. And then also, I think that Harris does have somewhat of a suspect chin. So even though Abdurakhimov is not known for his devastating knockout power, you never know. I think he could get the job done there as well. So contradicting myself a little bit, I guess, in this spot. But what I'm trying to say is I think this fight has potential to kind of go a little while. And as it goes, I think Abdurakhimov is going to be the better mixed martial artist, and it's going to show. So even though it is a competitive type of fight, and it's basically a pick-em fight, and it probably will stay that way all the way through, I still have to slightly lean towards Abdurakhimov because I do think he is the better fighter.
I actually really like Abdurakhimov here. Walt Harris had a nice performance in his last fight, picking up that knockout against Cody East. But for the most part, he has been a pretty big disappointment in his UFC career, especially that first stint where he went 0-3 with two knockout losses. Now, Shamil Abdurakhimov, he's not the most powerful guy, but he is quick. He has good hand speed, high volume. He's pretty accurate on the feet. He's overall just a really solid fighter in the heavyweight division. And I think, you know, I thought he was undersized at first, but it looked like he packed on a little bit of extra weight in his last fight, and it helped him. You know, he was able to stifle just about everything Anthony Hamilton threw at him. He was able to avoid takedowns. And he just beat him up on the feet over the course of three rounds. It was an impressive performance. But what I really liked about Abdurakhimov in that fight was the fact that he wasn't just fighting at range or in the phone booth. When he was in the clinch, he was doing damage. When they separated from the clinch, he was doing damage. He was landing big hooks, stiff uppercuts. So he just mixes it up, and he is always looking to do damage, even in transition. And that's something I don't think Walt Harris has really added to his game yet. He's kind of the type of fighter that just wants to throw down when he's got room to throw down. And if Abdurakhimov can just make this a fight over the course of everywhere that it can take place, whether it's in the clinch, whether it's on the ground, just at any spot, then I think Abdurakhimov is going to gain those small advantages. Now, of course, he's going to have to watch out because Harris does hit really hard. And while Abdurakhimov showed a solid chin and has been pretty durable in his first two UFC fights, he does definitely have to watch out because Walt Harris could put him out if he connects with something really solid. Now, if this fight goes to the ground, then I expect Abdurakhimov should have a pretty solid edge. He has a pretty good submission game. Now, he didn't look very good on the ground in his UFC debut when Tim Johnson just completely blasted him at the end of the first round with a massive ground and pound. But I definitely think he's a lot better on the ground than he showed there. He was just, I don't know what was going on with him in that fight. But if it goes to the floor here, he should have a pretty solid edge against Harris, who really hasn't showed much of anything on the floor other than when he followed East to the ground and put him away with some punches. So as long as Abdurakhimov doesn't get rocked or dropped, then I think he's going to win a decision or maybe even take this fight over late and put Harris away. So I'm going to side with Abdurakhimov. I just think his experience and everything else is going to be a little bit too much for Harris. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Hakran Diaz, who is 23-4-1, taking on Andre Feely, who is 15-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Diaz, -185, the comeback on Feely at +145. Right now it's Diaz -175, the comeback on Feely is +155. So line margins have basically tightened up a little bit. Two-way action coming into this fight. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Diaz kind of climb up as we progress and get closer to fight time here a little bit, because I think a lot of people are going to probably end up backing him more so than Feely. I mean, I think this is a good fight. It's an interesting fight. It's pretty competitive, and both guys definitely have attributes that will give each other problems. I think Feely is the better striker in this spot here. I think he's obviously got a reach advantage, which is going to help him in this fight. I think he's a gifted striker. His boxing is nice, but his kicking game, I think, is the most impressive thing. And obviously, Diaz, even against Swanson, had some problems with kicks. Feely's going to be that much more difficult for him to handle on the feet, I think, because of those kicks and because of the way he mixes things up, a little bit unorthodox. So I think Feely's going to really present a lot of problems to Diaz on the feet. But the problem here is, even though Feely has some decent wrestling, and throughout his career, if you look at it, I mean, the wrestling hasn't been a huge issue for Feely. He's been able in most cases against wrestlers to actually come out on top and defeat him. But, I mean, in his last fight against Yair Rodriguez, Rodriguez did manage to take Feely to the ground a couple times. And, I mean, Rodriguez isn't really known for his wrestling. He's, again, a well-rounded fighter. But that's really a path to victory that Diaz can take advantage of. I mean, if he's able to get Feely on the ground, can Feely get back up? He does eventually do that, but I think Diaz will spend enough time on top that he'll probably grind out some rounds. So that's the only problem here. I mean, Diaz is definitely getting better as far as the stand-up game goes. You could tell. You've seen some improvements from his UFC debut till now. He's definitely gotten more confidence on the feet. He's got a little bit more pop in his punches, and he can be effective in the striking game, but he's more of the grinding type of fighter. Once on the ground, you know, drop some ground and pound, maybe even look for a sub, but he's more of a grinder. So Diaz is going to try to grind Feely out, and I think he probably can. If he doesn't get finished, he'll probably grind out a decision win. Feely's a very, very tempting underdog. Honestly, I was going back and forth on this fight, but then again, if you dig a little bit deeper, I'm just a little bit concerned with Feely's takedown defense overall. It's decent, but I don't know if it's going to be good enough in this spot against Diaz. I think Diaz probably does get some takedowns, and that probably wins the fight. So not a confident pick, because I do think that Feely has a way to win this if he can keep upright. But I have to go with Diaz's ground game and his just basically grinding style to probably get the W. So I'm picking Hakran Diaz to win.
Yeah, the big problem here for me with Andre Feely is the fact that I don't think his takedown defense is that good. And Hakran Diaz, he does have solid takedowns. Like, that's his strongest part of his game. Now, Feely, if he has an advantage in this fight, it's at distance. His kicks are very dangerous. He has really done some damage with his kicks in the past, especially with his win over, like, Gabriel Benitez. So Diaz will definitely have to be on the lookout for that, because Feely can go low, he can go to the body, he can go to the head. Very dangerous with his kicking game and maybe with his straight punches. But for the most part, I think Diaz holds his own in the regular stand-up portion if they're at regular distance, especially if Diaz is the one pressuring him a little bit. And when this fight goes to the floor, while Feely does have some decent wrestling of his own and he's an okay scrambler, I just don't think he's at Diaz's level. Diaz is a very good grappler, excellent wrestling, good positioning, good top control. You know, he can kind of just grind you out. Like, unlike a lot of the other Brazilians in Nova União, he's more like a traditional wrestler type of style a little bit without the traditional wrestler background of, you know, being an All-American wrestler and stuff. So, as long as Diaz can kind of just get in Andre Feely's face and not give him a lot of space, then I don't see how he loses this fight. His chin is pretty solid. His regular stand-up is always improving, and it looks like he should be able to hold his own against most UFC featherweights, especially somebody like Andre Feely, who is a little bit wild at times and definitely has openings in his defense that should allow Hockren to land some good shots on the feet. And if it goes to the floor, Diaz is going to be in complete control. So I have to side with Hockren Diaz here. I think this is a very winnable fight for him, and he should probably win a decision. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a light heavyweight contest between Henrique da Silva, who is 11-0, and Joachim Christensen, who is making his UFC debut at 13-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened to Silva -125, the comeback on Christensen at -115. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is da Silva at -135. Christensen is at +115. Da Silva did get bet up a little bit more now, and now we're starting to see some action on Christensen. So again, I think if there is some two-way action coming into this fight, and it probably continues. A lot of split opinions on this fight as well. Starting off with da Silva, we mentioned earlier, I mean, his fight with Jonathan Wilson earlier was pretty fun to watch. I mean, as long as it lasted, they definitely both had an impact with their striking games. I mean, both of these guys, or both of them, were really good, effective, powerful strikers, especially da Silva and his clinch, man. I'll tell you what, that was the most impressive thing in that fight for me, was his Muay Thai plum. I mean, that thing was great. He was able to deliver some serious punishment with those knees. I don't know how Jonathan Wilson was able to absorb some of that. I mean, they were spot on. Great accuracy, powerful. I mean, devastating. It really sucks the life out of you during a fight. So da Silva has that to worry about. Now, as far as his overall striking, I mean, he's a Muay Thai black belt, so he does have a well-rounded striking game. I mean, his hands are okay. His kicking game's okay as well. But again, I think the best attribute for his striking game is that clinch work. It's really good. But his defense is a little bit suspect. I mean, he was dropped against Jonathan Wilson. Again, Wilson does have some power, so it's understandable a little bit. But, I mean, da Silva can get a little bit better. I think he's a little slow maybe on the feet. He needs to move a little bit better. And then on the ground, he has a purple belt in jiu-jitsu, so he does have some skill there as well. He's able to reverse, obviously, fighters that are on top at times as well. But I think still the ground probably is one of his weakest attributes here. Now, and Christensen, I mean, he's making his UFC debut. He's been on the Euro scene now for a little while, and he's actually had some quality wins. Not bad. So it's another resume here that is not riddled with cans. I mean, Christensen's actually fought some decent fighters, and he's come away successful. And he's the type of fighter that actually improves as his fights go on. I mean, you could really see his stand-up game getting better, his ground game getting better, his wrestling getting better. It's good. I mean, he's putting in the work, and you could definitely see it coming through. So I was impressed with what I've seen in Christensen. I mean, there is some head-scratching things in this fight, though. I mean, Christensen, if I didn't know that he was 37, going to be 38, I believe, at some point this year, I was kind of shocked because he doesn't fight like it. I mean, he doesn't look old. He doesn't, he doesn't have that cardio that slows down at all. So he doesn't look that age at all. I mean, he looks much younger. I mean, his physique, he's strong. He's big for the weight class as well. And again, he doesn't have really those cardio issues. He doesn't even really have those chin issues either. So, I mean, that's one thing with Christensen. I would like to see his defense get a little bit tighter, maybe get a little bit more speed. That's not going to happen, obviously, at this point of his career. But that being said, you know, he absorbs punishment pretty well. I mean, he takes it. He doesn't really get rocked or rattled in fights too often. So I like what I see from Christensen. I like what I see from Da Silva. So this really should be a fun fight. I think what it comes down to is Christensen has the better cardio. I think he's the more solid, stable fighter overall. He's a better mixed martial artist, more complete mixed martial artist. And he does have a little bit of power in his hands. I kind of didn't mention that as well. So even though he's a well-rounded fighter, I think he has enough pop in his punches, and it's starting to get a little bit better. He's starting to get more confidence with it as well. He's starting to knock more people out. So he does have the ability to knock people out. And I think that Christensen, as the fight progresses, I mean, Da Silva's going to definitely have to watch those hands and at the same time watch the ground game, because Christensen does go for takedowns. He's successful at him. He's got decent wrestling. And then once on the ground, he does look for positional control, looks for the sub as well. So I think as it progresses, Christensen kind of takes over a little bit. Da Silva does tend to slow down. I think it's going to happen again in this spot here. And Christensen either finds his way to victory inside the distance, or if it hits the scorecards, I think he does enough to probably win 2 out of 3 rounds here as well. So should be a fun fight. I mean, both of these guys are definitely dangerous enough to finish each other, but I have to lean a little bit more towards the better fighter, the more solid fighter, in my opinion, and it's Christensen, so I'm going his way.
And I expect this fight to be really competitive. Christensen, even though he's 37 years old and making his UFC debut, he doesn't fight like he's 37 years old. He has a good pace, high energy, good power. He's well-rounded, and his conditioning is excellent. So he's actually a really solid addition to the UFC light heavyweight division. Now, his opponent, Henrique Da Silva, is actually very similar. I think he has excellent conditioning. He has solid overall striking, especially his Muay Thai. I mean, when you get him on the inside, he can do some just devastating damage with his knees, with his elbows, just anything on the inside, especially if he can get you in the Thai clinch like he did against Jonathan Wilson. Like, he can really, really hurt you. Da Silva is also a very solid grappler. You saw that in the Wilson fight where, you know, he was on his back, and then after getting rocked, and then boom, just beautiful sweep, got top position, and then just really took it to Wilson. So I really do think Henrique Da Silva is an excellent fighter. His chin is pretty solid. His pace is good. I think he mixes things up very well on the feet, although he is going to be at a slight reach disadvantage against Christensen. So he's going to have to be a little careful here, because Christensen knows how to use that reach too. Like, he does some good damage on the feet. So I expect this fight to be competitive. I expect it to be pretty close. I'm slightly leaning to Silva because he has that experience now inside the octagon. He looked good in his UFC debut. And I think if this fight wears on, I think he can do some really good damage in the clinch. And maybe that can take something out of Christensen a little bit. But if this stays at distance, I think Christensen could be, you know, potentially playing spoiler, but I'm very, very slightly leaning Henrique Da Silva here. Now, moving on to the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have a flyweight contest between Louis Smolka, who is 11-1, and UFC newcomer Brandon Moreno, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Smolka -350, the comeback of Moreno at +250. And right now it is actually Smolka -440. The comeback of Moreno is +350. And it was a little bit lower earlier today as well. So more action coming in Smolka's way. And a lot of it's probably parlayed as well. I mean, Smolka's looked tremendous. I mean, he is definitely one of the best flyweights in the sport right now. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the guy, you talk about a well-versed mixed martial artist, that's Smolka as well. I think his striking game and especially his defense can improve a little bit. He kind of has that tall man defense at times, but at the same time, I mean, he can be effective with the striking, but what the beautiful part of his game is definitely the grappling. I mean, man, the guy has some length for the weight class, and he's got some great technique to go along with it. And on the ground, that could be a handful for most fighters. I mean, you could see him scrambling out of bad spots, getting a better position, dominating guys on the ground. I mean, guys that have actually decent jiu-jitsu games to go along with it, decent ground games. I mean, he's been nothing but impressive. So Smolka on the ground is going to be tough for anybody to deal with in the UFC. I mean, it's that good. So he definitely has an edge over pretty much everybody he faces as far as the grappling goes. Now, Moreno, he's making his UFC debut. He's actually an Ultimate Fighter vet this past season. And he lost by rear naked choke in the second round to the number one seed, actually, Pantoja, in his first fight. And he was actually, just a side note here, a 16 seed. You know how it's a tournament, for, obviously, to see who fights Demetrius Johnson for the flyweight title. And he was one of the participants, and he fought the number one seed in Pantoja. And like I said, actually, he did pretty well, I think. I mean, he was definitely respectable in that fight. It was close. Pantoja ended up turning it up a little bit in round two and ended up getting the victory there. So he got it by sub, by the way. But that being said, Moreno was definitely game, and I think he's going to be a welcome addition at age 22 to the UFC flyweight division. And I think he's going to give Smoko a fight here. I think Moreno, I mean, he does have a lot of power on the feet. He's able to, I mean, he only has one knockout officially on his resume, but he's able to land and do some damage along the way. He actually has a pretty good, decent wrestling game and a ground game to go along with it. I mean, so he's no slouch on the ground himself, but he doesn't want to really play that game with Smoko, as I mentioned. I mean, Smoko is definitely one of the best grapplers, one of the best submission artists in the 125-pound weight class. So Moreno's going to probably want to keep this fight up, sprawl, brawl, and try to knock Smoko out and test that defense a little bit and try to have success there. So it's going to be a tough uphill battle for him. I mean, that's why I opened it this high, and I think the public definitely agreed overall, and that's why he's where he's at right now too. I think the line is getting a little bit out of hand though. Moreno is definitely better even against a guy like Smoka than the current price indicates. But that being said, I mean, if you're going to pick somebody and you think he's going to win, it is a guy like Smoka over Moreno, because I think he's just such a difficult matchup right now for most people, and he's getting confidence. I mean, he's got that UFC experience. He's fought decent competition throughout his career in the UFC, obviously, as well. So he's kind of climbing that ladder a little bit. And of course, he's going to have a full training camp where Moreno is not. He's taking this fight on short notice as well. So a lot of respect for Moreno stepping in here and taking this fight. I think he's going to probably perform better than most people think. But ultimately, what it comes down to is Smoka probably getting the submission win once it does hit the ground. So I don't think Moreno is going to pull off the upset here. I got to lean with Smoka to get the W.
I really like Luis Smoka here. Now, obviously, Brandon Moreno is stepping in on short notice. He's the tough Fed, as Nick mentioned, competing very recently, actually, on the show. But the problem here is Moreno's ground is just a little bit lacking. You saw that in his fight on the show. And Luis Smoka, in my opinion, might be the best grappler in the flyweight division. Like, he has showcased such incredible ability to scramble and win ground exchanges, to not ever be in a bad position for long, always looking to gain a superior position, force scrambles. And you've seen it in his last couple fights against guys that were pretty solid grapplers, you know, Patrick Houlihan, Ben Wen, just completely dominated them on the floor. And I think if he can get Moreno on the ground, then Moreno is going to be in really big trouble. And it's not just the threat of the submission, which is very real. It's also the fact that Smolka is attacking on the ground. And he's not just attacking with submissions, which he does do, but he is throwing heat when he's in anything from half guard or better. He just starts dropping bombs, and that can really do some damage as well. Just wear you out, and eventually he can get a TKO victory or just soften you up and get the submission. So Moreno needs to do everything he can to avoid the ground at all costs against Smoka, because on the feet, Smoka is definitely vulnerable. Smoka has a decent kicking game on the feet. He's picked up some wins that way in the past, and his hands are okay, but he is vulnerable on the feet. His chin isn't the best. He's been clipped and hurt and rocked in several of his fights, and if Moreno can really get things going without getting taken down, he might be able to pull off a shocker and maybe finish Smoka. But that's really the only thing he has here, in my opinion, is a puncher's chance, because the second Smoka gets his hands on him and gets this fight to the floor, I think it's over. So Moreno is a pretty solid overall striker. You saw that in his bout on the show. It was the 1 seed versus the 16 seed, and he won the first round by being the better striker, and he was winning the second round at the beginning of it too. So Moreno definitely does have some ability on the feet, and if he can bring that same tenacity against Smoka, you never know. Something, you know, he could definitely land that crazy one-off shot. But for the most part, I just think Smoka corners him, maybe presses him against the fence, and then eventually just gets him on his back, and then it's going to be over from there. So I'm going to side with Luis Smoka. That's definitely the smart play here. But don't get over, as long as he doesn't get overconfident, he should win. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Josh Berkman, who is 29-13 with one no contest, taking on UFC newcomer Zach Otto, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Berkman -210, the comeback on Otto +160. Right now it's Berkman -235. The comeback on Otto is +195. So a little bit more support coming in Berkman's way. Nothing crazy though, obviously. But I mean, Berkman is the savvy vet. He's been around the sport for a long time, making another run here in the UFC. Unfortunately for him, it didn't work out so great in his last fight against Felder. But with all that being said, I mean, he's still, in my opinion, the best he's ever been. Maybe not physically, because he is 35 years old and he's been through a lot of wars throughout his UFC career, but mentally, fight IQ wise, everything. I mean, well, I shouldn't say fight IQ wise either, because I mean, he's had his issues. I'm pointing out particularly that Kim fight where it was a little frustrating seeing him try to get the fight to the ground. But anyway, that being said, overall, I mean, he's a savvy vet, like I mentioned. And I think he's just a class above Otto right now. Otto is making his UFC debut. He's stepping in on short notice. He's in for Bobby Green, actually, and it's about, I think, 10 days notice officially, but Otto was training for another fight. And to get into him a little bit further, I mean, he is a big, strong welterweight, and this fight, by the way, is at welterweight. So Berkman was originally supposed to fight Green at 155, but this has been changed since Otto does step in at short notice to a welterweight fight. Berkman has fought at welterweight most of his career, so it's not going to be anything shocking to him either. And he probably at this point prefers it a little bit more because he doesn't have to do that brutal weight cut. But again, back into Otto. A big, strong welterweight. I mean, aggressive. He pushes forward. He pushes a very high pace overall. He's got a wrestling base. He goes for takedowns often. And he does have power on the feet with both hands. And he does even mix up some kicks. So there's a lot of stuff to like about Otto offensively because he is the type of powerful fighter that will give a lot of people problems overall. But his strike defense definitely needs some work. I mean, he's hittable. And when he's not really pushing the pace a little bit more and he sits back, he does tend to get hit a little bit more. And obviously Berkman does have enough power to do some damage in Otto. Otto has been knocked out in the past before. And I think that Berkman could definitely test that chin and maybe have some success doing so. Also, Otto seems a bit, you know, his cardio seems to be spotty a little bit at times, especially with 10 days notice. Again, he was training for another fight. I believe it was October 7th. So it shouldn't be a huge impact here, but I still give the overall conditioning edge probably to Berkman at this point still. I think that Otto will slow down enough that Berkman probably still edges it out. Even though Berkman has been known to slow down as well, I think still in this spot here, he should be okay against Otto. So, I mean, Otto could step in here, knock Berkman out, could step in here, catch him in a quick sub or something crazy like that. But overall, I think Berkman, if it hits the scorecards, Berkman does probably get the W. I think if there's going to be a knockout, I lean a little bit more towards Berkman there as well. And of course, we all know about Berkman's submission skill offensively. I mean, he has a 6-6 guillotine as well. So I think if there's going to be a finish, it's probably Berkman. If it's going to hit the scorecards, it's probably Berkman as well. So even though Otto has a finisher's chance, I still got to lean with the vet here. And I think Berkman probably does get the W.
Otto should definitely be competitive as long as he is in the fight offensively. His big problem, though, is when somebody takes the fight to him, maybe puts the pressure on him, he doesn't handle it that well. And I think if Josh Berkman is smart and really gets in his face, it's going to be difficult for Otto to respond. Now, Otto is very physically strong. He has pretty solid overall wrestling. His top control is excellent. And he can just wing some bombs on the feet too. But really, when he is winning, he's the type of fighter that just wins more. But when he's losing, I think he can lose more too. So, if I'm Josh Berkman, I get in Otto's face. I throw some heavy leather on the feet. I think he needs to mix in takedowns. All the things that he has really had some success with in his UFC career, just has to put it all together. And I think Otto could get overwhelmed a little bit, especially, you know, making his UFC debut like this under the bright lights on short notice. It could be difficult, even if he was training for another fight. Now, one thing you do have to consider is Berkman was initially preparing for a lightweight fight against Bobby Green, but this fight is going to be at welterweight. So, he was kind of getting his body ready for another lightweight drop, and he's not having to make that same cut. So I don't expect Berkman will have conditioning as a problem whatsoever, but maybe he could get pushed around a little bit by Otto, who is definitely more of a natural welterweight. Now, Berkman has fought at welterweight throughout his career, so it shouldn't be too much of an issue for him, but you never know. Now, Josh Berkman, I mean, he throws hard. He has big-time punching power. His chin is granite. The only time he's ever been put out was the just absolutely insane fight he had against Patrick Cote. So I'm not too worried about Berkman defensively or his ability to take punishment. And if he can mix things up, as long as he can get a takedown or two, I think Otto could definitely get himself in trouble. Otto's been put on his back by fighters that are not UFC caliber before. So if Berkman can get something going on the ground, I think Otto could definitely get in trouble. So I'm siding with Josh Berkman here. I think it's just going to be a little too much too soon for Zach Otto making his UFC debut. So I think Josh Berkman can potentially get a finish, but at worst, probably win 2 out of 3 rounds and take a decision. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the lightweight division. We have Will Brooks, who is 18-1, taking on Alex Oliveira, who is 14-3-1 with 1-0 contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Brooks minus 280, the comeback on Oliveira at plus 200. Right now it is actually Brooks minus 270, the comeback on Oliveira is plus 230. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is, again, two-way action coming out of this fight. Early on it was Oliveira, now it's a little bit more towards Brooks. I mean, Will Brooks, he made it over from Bellator, and he had a successful UFC debut against a very, very game Ross Pearson. So solid start for his career, even though a lot of people were expecting, I think, Brooks to kind of be a little bit more effective in his wrestling game in that fight against Pearson. He still got the W against, again, another savvy vet that's is really a tough out and has always been in the lightweight division. So good debut win, despite him not maybe looking as good as he could have, or at least most of us expected. That being said, he's got another tough fight ahead of him with Oliveira. I mean, Oliveira is definitely a game opponent. He's got some good striking. That's what he's known for more than anything else. Oliveira has some length as well. He's going to have, I believe, a 4-inch reach advantage over Brooks in this spot. And he basically knows how to use it. I mean, at distance, he does have some success. He could use his kicks. He could use his punches. I mean, he fights behind a jab okay at times as well, and he does have some power, and he's a finisher as well. He's the type of fighter that if he rocks you, he can pounce on you. I mean, he's got that killer instinct that he doesn't let you go. And then if he takes your back, he's definitely dangerous on the ground as well. He's capable of submitting you. He does have some actually decent underrated wrestling to go along with it. I mean, he has the ability to take most fighters down and control them on the ground as well and go for the finish there. Unfortunately for him against Brooks, that's probably not going to be the case. But Oliveira's game, he's definitely a tough out, especially for Brooks in his second UFC appearance. Now, Oliveira has been fighting, again, up at welterweight. Now he's coming back down to lightweight. So it's another scenario where he's been fighting in two divisions, two weight classes. So it's going to be interesting to see if that has any impact at all. I don't think it should, but you never know. And Brooks, on the other hand, man, he is the ultimate grinder. I mean, in most cases, he has the ability to take the fight to the floor, grind opponents out, get position. He can obviously finish the fight on the ground as well. On the feet, it's interesting because Brooks is definitely improving. You see him fight by fight through his Bellator career. He's getting a little bit more speed, more accuracy with the strikes. He mixes things up better. He can land some kicks along the way as well. So even on the feet, I think Brooks can obviously – even against Pearson, he did fairly well. So I think even on the feet here, Brooks can have some success. But I just think it's probably going to be better suited for Brooks to probably make this an ugly fight and kind of slow the pace of the fight down, get Oliveira to the ground and try to grind him out as he does, or get him up against the cage and just make it an ugly, boring fight. I mean, unfortunately for the fans, it's probably not going to be great to watch if that's the case, but for Brooks, it's probably the smartest thing to do. So I do think that he's a better grinder. He's going to probably be able to do that against Oliveira, but he's got to be game. He's got to be careful, man, because Oliveira has enough power and finishing ability to definitely make some, misery for Brooks. I mean, if you look at Brooks' fight back in Bellator when he suffered a defeat to Awad in that spot, I mean, he was able to, Awad was able to keep the fight upright, and he ended up landing some punches on Brooks to put him out. So I could see a repeat performance here. I don't think it happens because Brooks, I think, has smartened up since then. And he is really, again, another one of those fighters that gets better fight by fight. He has some motivation right now. He wants to prove that he's the best lightweight in the world. He wants to work up that ladder and eventually earn himself a title shot. So I think we're going to see a pretty good Will Brooks in this spot. I think he's deserving to be in the UFC. He's definitely one of the best lightweights in the world. So a win over Oliveira, I think, is just going to kind of keep him going in the right direction, because he definitely can contend for the UFC lightweight title, and it's going to be interesting to see him if he can make it to that spot. So my pick is going to be Will Brooks to defeat Oliveira. I think he probably gets the job done.
Will Brooks, while it wasn't the greatest UFC debut, I thought he showed a lot of promising things in that fight against Ross Pearson. He held his own in the stand-up. Now, I know Pearson was definitely concerned about the takedown, so he was holding back a little bit, but that's something that all really talented wrestlers have, is they've got that takedown in their back pocket so their opponents can't quite throw the kitchen sink at them, because they know that if they get themselves out of position, then they're going to be on their back, and they do not want to do that. So that usually allows a wrestler to go ahead and dictate the striking and sometimes win against better strikers. And that's definitely what happened in the Will Brooks fight. He looked solid overall. And he did end up picking up takedowns as the fight wore on. But for the most part, I mean, he held his own in the stand-up against Ross Pearson, a really talented striker. So against Alex Oliveira, I think this time around, he's probably going to want to get this fight to the floor. Now, Oliveira, he fights long. He is dropping back down to the lightweight division after two fights in the welterweight division. He hasn't fought at lightweight in about a year. So that is one thing to consider for Oliveira. Might be a tough weight cut for him. But overall, this is just a winnable fight for Will Brooks. I think this is a little bit easier of a fight, actually. Now, Alex Oliveira does have some power. He has some pretty good technique on the feet. But for the most part, he is been able to be taken down by superior grapplers. You saw Donald Cerrone was kind of able to take him down pretty quickly, get that first round finish. Gilbert Burns had a lot more trouble, but when he did get him to the floor, completely dominated him once he was on the canvas. So if Will Brooks can mix it up on the feet enough that Oliveira maybe opens up a little more on the stand-up, that takedown is going to come, and I think he's going to really get Oliveira down in a hurry the second that an opening is available. And when he gets Oliveira down, I don't think Oliveira is getting back up. Will Brooks has really solid top control. He's very good at holding his position, and he can do some damage. He has a bit of ground and pound. He has a little bit of submission skill. And just for the most part, I think he can just stay busy enough to, at worst, win rounds. And don't discount Will Brooks' striking. I really think his stand-up has come a long way, and I think he can hold his own in the feet against Oliveira as well, especially if Oliveira is worried about the takedown. So just with that threat of the takedown, with Brooks being a solid, accurate striker with a pretty high pace, I think it's going to be a potentially long night for Alex Oliveira. I see Will Brooks winning probably by decision, but maybe he can pour it on late and put Oliveira away. But at the worst, I think he is going to be winning a decision here. Now, this takes us to the main event of the evening. In the bantamweight division, we have former top flyweight contenders John Lineker and John Dodson. Lineker is 28-7 overall, and Dodson is 19-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Dodson, -125. The comeback on Lineker, -105. It did flip originally, but now it's flipped back. It's Dodson currently at 5dimes.eu at -130. The comeback on Lineker is at +110. Man, this is an interesting fight. This is a tough fight because you got two of the best flyweights going at it now at bantamweight, and they've had some success, obviously, in bantamweight as well. So this is going to be an interesting fight. And for me, I've been one. I mean, early on when Lineker made his UFC debut, I did see a lot of potential in him. I mean, even before, you know, he lost to Gatnow in his debut, like I said. But, I mean, at the same time in that fight, he did show us some weaknesses. He showed us some cardio issues, and that was way back when. I understand that. But I guess in the back of my mind, I've kind of had a little bit of that Lineker left in me, that image of him kind of gassing as he goes. And he's such an aggressive fighter that it leads to mistakes at times as well. I mean, Bagatanov was able to defeat him as well. But outside of that, I mean, he has looked pretty good and he's faced some decent competition. I mean, and I've been kind of wrong. I've countered him out in several fights that he's gone up against decent competition and he's actually come through. Although against a guy like, recently in his fight against, Ian McCall, I did expect him to kind of pull that off. And McCall has a very, obviously a great resume on his part as well. So it was a huge win for him. But then after that, I mean, beating the likes of Francisco Rivera, which a lot of people believed that Rivera was going to be maybe too much for him when, you know, step up, at the bantamweight class with a ton of power and the way Rivera fights. You know, they thought he would possibly get caught there and he didn't. Lineker looked great in that fight. He absorbed some punishment. It seemed like he didn't even really flinch and he was able to dish it out even better. And then even a fight that's going to fly under the radar, the Rob Font fight. Rob Font is actually a pretty good fighter. Lineker made him look foolish. I mean, I was surprised how easy Lineker won that fight. And then, of course, you know, in his last fight against Michael McDonald, McDonald was obviously a title contender at one time. So that was a pretty impressive win as well because McDonald's no slouch. So Lineker has been on a roll, and you cannot deny the guy. He seems to have addressed some of those issues that he once had, his cardio. His takedown defense seems to be improving as well. So, and he's the type of fighter that, man, he's almost like a zombie. He just pushes forward and he throws everything with intent to kill, man. I mean, it's crazy. He's got so much power in his hands and he's got a granite chin and he does push a high pace, meaning just pushes forward and he's the aggressor in most fights. So that's going to win on the scorecards in most cases. And if he doesn't win on the scorecards, he's probably going to get rid of you before it hits the scorecard. So, at flyweight, at bantamweight, it doesn't matter. He's the same type of fighter, and he's only getting better, and that's scary for most people in both weight classes. Now, Dodson, on the other hand, I mean, he was the one that was one of the most competitive fighters, I mean, especially in that first matchup with Demetrius Johnson, the current, obviously, flyweight king. Dodson was really phenomenal in that first fight, especially because he was able to even drop DJ, get him in some trouble. I mean, it was a pretty competitive fight. Then, of course, I mean, Demetrius Johnson did look better in the rematch, but outside of that, Dodson has looked great as well. I mean, the guy has speed, he's got athleticism, he's got power. I mean, he's got decent fight IQ, a good camp behind him as well. And I mean, he's got devastating knockout power in his own right. So, I mean, that goes a long way. And for a guy like Dodson with his speed, landing on a guy like Lineker, which basically absorbs punishment, takes, you know, some clean shots, usually absorbs them pretty well. Dodson can definitely be the first possibly to test that chin of Lineker and maybe even put him out. It doesn't seem like it because he absorbs punishment so well, but I think Dodson has enough speed and power that Lineker has to be a little bit smarter in this fight. I mean, if you look back, Dodson obviously won the bantamweight division on the Ultimate Fighter when he was on that season, and he beat TJ Dillashaw, the current, well, not, I shouldn't say the current because Dominic Cruz is obviously, but he just recently had the title. I mean, that was a controversial decision loss for TJ Dillashaw. So against one of the guys that won the bantamweight title, he was able to knock him out. And a lot of that was due to speed. With speed comes with the power for Dodson as well. So Dodson is no joke at all. I mean, I think again, he's been having success in the bantamweight division. And I think he will continue to because he's got the takedown defense. He's got the wrestling. He's got the speed to make life miserable for a lot of opponents. So this is a true pick-em type of fight, in my opinion, because Lineker is going to be the one pushing forward, being the aggressor in this spot. Dodson is going to be the one that's using his footwork, using that speed, and trying to land effective back on Lineker as well. So I could realistically see this fight go either way. Both of these guys have enough power to finish each other, even though I think Lineker's chin seems to be a little bit better. But I think that Dodson is the better still mixed martial artist. He doesn't utilize all parts of his game enough. I think if he wants to look for the takedown and he really focuses on getting Lineker to the ground here, I think he's probably going to be able to do so. It's just, will he have that kind of game plan in mind? So I think he might need to mix it up and kind of start fighting out of the box here a little bit more than he normally does and really, you know, try to use the ground game to his advantage in this spot. Outside of that, even if he's not able to, I think still he's got enough speed and power that he could counter a big Lineker strike and maybe even, again, be the first one to put him out. So I don't know. I'm going back and forth on this one as well. Again, it's a true pick-em type of fight. It's going to be a fun fight. I can't wait to watch it, really. But as of right now, I'm leaning a little bit more towards Dodson. I think that, again, I don't want to go against Lineker because he's burnt me in the past before, but I still don't want to count Dodson out as well. And I think overall the general opinion right now is Lineker is just a monster that's going to keep on winning. And I think that might get derailed in a quality against a quality fighter like Dodson. So I'm going to pick Dodson to win this fight. Again, how much confidence I have at this point. I mean, I could, again, weigh-ins maybe flip back. That's what kind of fight it is for me. Back and forth it goes. But right now I do think that Dodson is still the better fighter, and I think he probably gets a win.
Dodds and Lineker is definitely a dream matchup. I mean, this would have been a dream matchup in the flyweight division, and now it's actually happening at bantamweight where these guys don't have to cut as much weight. I'm ecstatic just thinking about it. These guys hit so damn hard, and both guys can take it too. So, I mean, I'm just expecting a full-out brawl. Now, the one thing I am concerned about, though, is pace. John Dodson, while he is known for being one of the fastest, quickest guys in the entire UFC, he's not as active as John Lineker. Lineker is the type of guy that just bites down at his mouthpiece, moves forward, and just tries to take your head off from the opening bell until the fight's over. And most of the time, he knocks his opponent out before he ever has to worry about anything. But he did showcase in that three-round fight against Rob Font that he can put the pressure on his opponent for three full rounds and keep going. So even though this is a five-round fight, and John Dodson has fought in a five-round fight before twice, I don't think that Dodson will have a big advantage there in terms of conditioning. I think Lineker, really, he hasn't gassed in a fight since his UFC debut when he missed weight and had no corner and had everything going wrong. And ever since, he's looked pretty good. So I think Lineker is the type of fighter that just with the way he fights, with the pressure he puts on his opponents, he wins rounds, even if he doesn't get the knockout. So I think this is going to be a difficult matchup here for John Dodson. Now, Dodson is a little bit more well-rounded than Lineker. Dodson can go for the submission. Dodson has better wrestling, but he doesn't really use it that often. And for the most part, I expect this to be just a stand-up fight over the course of five rounds, or shorter, depending. And while both of these guys hit incredibly hard, I don't think John Lineker has ever even been dazed in a fight, whether alone rocked or dropped or anything. So that is definitely something you have to consider. So even though John Dodson hits just insanely hard, I don't know if he can knock John Lineker out. Like, he's just that tough. And Lineker, I mean, he's not afraid to take a shot either. I mean, that being said, this is crazy, but they both actually do have the exact same striking defense, even with Lineker not being afraid to absorb a shot. Both guys, you know, block or avoid 58% of their opponent's strikes. Now, in terms of pure pace and volume, you have to favor John Lineker. Just with the way that he fights, the pressure he puts on his opponents, I think John Dodson, he's more the type of fighter that's willing to sit on the outside at times and just kind of wait for that perfect opportunity. And if that opportunity doesn't come, or if it doesn't come often enough, then I can just see him losing rounds here. I don't know if either guy is going to be able to finish the other, because both have showcased excellent chins, durability, and conditioning. So it could just come down to who can push the pace, who can win rounds. And with John Dodson's style being more of that pick your right moment type of style, where it's worked for him because he has a lot of knockouts on his record, I don't know if he's going to be able to win rounds here against John Lineker. So I'm going to side with Lineker. I just think he is going to get right in Dodson's face and throw heat and force him to fight a fight that he doesn't want to fight. And that's always a great plan of action if you want to get a win, is to make someone fight your fight. And John Lineker does that as good as anybody in the UFC right now. So I'm going to side with John Lineker. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 96. Our premium bets will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.